Recording in progress.
Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order Wednesday, May 10th, 2023 at 12:03. Is there any public comment? I'll ask again, any public comment? Anything that is not on the agenda? Okay, moving on to approval of minutes for March 8th, 2023.
John Coleman, move approval, Madam Chair.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Oops. Go ahead, Sherry. Well, I'll second it, Wendy Max Studis, Simsbury.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 I'll abstain because I wasn't there.
Okay, thank you.
I will as well abstain on that.
Laura, are you all set with that?
Yeah, was that you, Fred?
No, that was James.
Oh, James. Newington. Okay, perfect.
No problem.
All right. And Judy, was that you as well?
Yeah. Yes, I abstained. Yeah.
Thank you. All set to go.
Okay. Next is staff reports.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori. This is Matt Hart. I can take the lead here, and we'll keep the staff reports. They'll be quite short today, so that we can focus on the business items today. So thank you all for joining this afternoon's meeting. We appreciate your time and attention here. Just three things I wanted to highlight under my report. First, we're very excited to begin our strategic visioning exercise, which we've been talking about, you know, for some months now. And very pleased that we have retained the team from Grossman Solutions to serve as our facilitator for this project. And we do have two members of the team here with us today, Andrew and Ronnie, if you want to wave. And I'll ask them if they want to make a few brief comments in a second. But as you may recall from our discussions, our previous discussions at Policy Board and the Executive Committee, you know, we are embarking upon this project to identify our strategic priorities for the next 3 to 5 years. You know, here at CROG, we have a whole variety of plans. We really want to focus on our organization and the Policy Board and what do we think is key and critical and present areas of opportunities in the future. So we're going to conduct a staff retreat in a couple of weeks on May 25th. Our staff is going to be talking about our organizational values and what they see as strategic priorities for our organization. We're going to come at it from the lens of how do we best serve our members? How do we best serve you? How do we best serve you? What are the critical challenges and opportunities that the region may be facing? And then we're going to conduct a shorter retreat with the Policy Board on the morning of June 12th. And we'll hold that from 9 to roughly noon at New Britain City Hall. Mayor Stewart has agreed to host, which is great. And again, in that forum, we'd love to see good representation from the Executive Committee. Hopefully most of you can attend and really think about, you know, how can the organization best serve you and your fellow members? And what do you see as our critical opportunities and challenges for the near and for the near future and so on beyond that as well? So let me pause there. Andrew and Ronnie, if you just want to say a quick hello and anything you might want to quickly add to my comments there.
No, not very much, but thank you very much. Very excited to work with you and really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to meeting all of you on June 12th. Some of you, as some of you know, we're interviewing many of you and a lot of the other teammates at CROG at the staff level too. And we're really learning a lot and digging in, and we are excited about the opportunity to help you advance your vision and mission as you look towards the future. So thank you very much and look forward to speaking with all of you.
Thank you, Andrew. All right. I'll move on to my last item, Lori. I wanted to highlight our annual meeting, which we're going to hold on the afternoon of June 15th. You know, we're going to shake it up a little bit this year and do something a little bit different. Typically, we would hold a luncheon meeting. Last year was quite successful. You know, we had not held in-person meetings during the pandemic. But this year, we're going to meet on June 15th at the Riverfront Recapture Boathouse. You know, excited about that. It'll be an afternoon session. We'll have a couple of presentations. And our keynote speaker is Michelle McCabe, the relatively new executive director for Connecticut Main Street. And she's going to talk about success stories from the pandemic and really what downtowns of all sizes, you know, some key things that they can do in order to remain successful for the long term, building on the lessons learned over the last couple of years. We're also going to have a bit of a social hour following the presentations, and we're excited about the chance to meet with all of you and mix and mingle a bit. So looking for good attendance on June 15th as well. So that's what we have for staff reports today. Lori, I did want to add something under the legislative update after we ask Chris Smith to provide his report. But can I take any quick questions on the two items I just commented on? All right, not hearing any, Lori, I would suggest we move on to Chris.
Okay, great. Chris?
Yes, can everyone hear me okay?
We can.
Great. Well, thank you very much and appreciate your indulgence. As I mentioned, for those who weren't on when I first joined, I'm filling in for one of my partners, Kathy Lutz. We had a little bit of a scheduling snafu today. And as you all are probably aware, the session is moving along. Can you not see me? I don't see, I see my background, but I don't see myself.
Yeah, we just see your background, Chris.
Huh. That's
okay. We know you're a handsome fellow.
All right, good. Well, I fooled you once already, so that's great. Just a couple of things to update in terms of generalities, and I do have a couple of bills to potentially highlight, and happy to try to take any questions you might have. First, want to mention that the COVID emergency is going to expire tomorrow. So that's just a bit of news. The governor just put out a press release on that a few minutes ago, actually. That's going to be ending tomorrow. There's still going to be some activities associated with that ongoing, but I think this is a step that we all knew was fast approaching, and we will officially be there tomorrow. There will be some data reports that continue, but they're going to be transitioning. They're going to be become less and less. So just happy to answer any questions you might have on that. Budget process. So we are about, what's today? We are 28 days, 11 hours, and 48 minutes away from the end of session. Ends on June 7th. We expect them to go right until midnight. On that CNADA adjournment, constitutional adjournment date. The main item of business awaiting action is the budget. I'm sure all of you have been following that to some degree. The governor proposed his budget in February. The committee budget came out with some bipartisan and interesting vote, where you had some Democrats voting no, and you had some Republicans voting yes out of committee, out of appropriations. I would call that the committee budget, which is probably more accurately described as the Democratic budget proposal. The House Republicans put out a budget last week that did focused a bit more on aggressive tax relief. Did not add a lot of the new spending items that the legislature enacted, with some exceptions. They did propose to fund education grants significantly higher than the legislative budget proposal did. And the Senate Republican is putting out their own budget today, if it's not already out. Again, I was just on a plane, so I'm behind on today's news. So what does that mean? I think that means that over the next 28 days, there will be conversations taking place. I do believe some initial conversations have begun with the legislative leaders from the majority party and the governor's office, but I don't think anything has really been locked down yet in any real meaningful way. I think that probably we have a few weeks on that, I think. The interesting components of this, it's a really complex Venn diagram where you have the governor's office and the legislative Republicans aligned on certain things. You have the governor and the legislative Democrats aligned on certain things. And then you have the legislature aligned on certain things at odds with the governor, not the least of which of those is how to deal with the what they're calling the fiscal guardrails and the spending cap. We're in a unique position historically where we have more money than we're legally allowed to spend. And that's creating some interesting politics within the building. Of particular interest to this group, I think that the education funding is one of the main components that's tied up in that. And there are a few options that have been chit-chatted about behind the scenes and sometimes a bit more publicly on how they're going to achieve what they want to achieve. I think first and foremost, they do want to get some more dollars into the legislature wants to get more dollars into education and nonprofits and higher ed. The governor does not want to circumvent the fiscal guardrails. And I do think that there is some discussion behind the scenes about doing some type of revenue intercepts, perhaps of the sales tax to capture some of those dollars before they actually go into the general fund, which would effectively circumvent some components of that. The governor thus far has been opposed to that. So we'll see how that shakes out. I do believe that they will, at this point, 28 days out, I would be shocked if they don't invest significantly more than what they did in those buckets out of committee. How they get there is another story. So more on that to come over the next couple of weeks. Why don't I stop there, see if anybody has any questions, and then if there's any bills in particular that I can try to answer any questions on, I'm happy to do that as well. Matt, were you speaking? I didn't, you might have been on mute.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, let's take any quick questions for Chris, and then there's one bill I'd like to comment on.
Yeah, I have a quick question, Matt. This is Fred.
Go ahead, Fred.
So regarding the education funding, last week we were hearing that going into appropriations, it was looking like they were going to add quite a bit more than what the governor had proposed for the ECS funding for the localities. That looked pretty, they were pretty confident that was going to move forward given the surplus that you referenced. But then coming out of appropriations, at least for the FY24 funding, it looks like they're back down to what the governor had proposed. Do you have any more insight onto what they're going to do specifically on that front?
Nothing more than some a little bit educated insight, no pun intended there. It's a little bit complicated. I'll try to make it as simple as I can. There's the education committee chairman, who's also the subcommittee chairman on appropriations for education, has the 5003 is the bill. I'm sure that many of you heard about that. That looks to invest significant amounts of funding to accelerate the ECS phase-in, the kind of true-up on ECS formula. With the ECS formula, you have the winners and the losers, or sometimes otherwise referred to as the overfunded towns and the underfunded towns. The underfunded towns would have their accelerated phase-in over the ECS formula that was adopted a couple of years ago, and the overfunded towns or what others might refer to as the quote-unquote losers would have stayed on that same track. That's in a bill that came out of the Education Committee and is currently sitting on the floor. In order for that to go forward in the way that it's drafted, the appropriations budget, which is a separate bill, came out of committee with significantly less dollars than what that bill proposed. However, it's still more than what the governor proposed. So 5003, the Representative Curry's bill to fully fund that, it was originally anticipated that would be about $280 million, give or take. When that came out of committee, the Office of Fiscal Analysis estimated it to be about $360 million, which is a substantially more than what was anticipated. The appropriations budget funded it at $150 million. So effectively a little bit less than half of what that bill would need to in order to be fully implemented. So what does that mean? I think $150 million is the floor of what they will do. I think they're actually going to invest significantly more than that $150 million, but I don't think that they get to the $360 million. And I think it's kind of a sliding scale as to what that bill looks like, depending on how much money they're able to negotiate to put towards that. I think the closer you get to the $360 million, the more of that bill I think survives. The closer you are to the $150 million, I do think it'll be more than that. I think you start to look at that that phase in of that bill being extended or the implementation delayed is my guess. To put it into comparative perspective, the legislative budget had it $150 million extra. The House Republican budget had $212 million extra. So it's I do think that we're probably going to be in that $200 to $275 million range is my guess, but that's just an educated guess at this point. So it's two things out there. It's the policy bill that's sitting there and waiting for the budget negotiations to happen so they know how much they have to work with, and then the budget itself, which is subject to the negotiations. And all of that is wrapped up in this interesting political debate over whether or not there's a willingness to circumvent some of the spending, the fiscal guardrails or the spending cap. I hope that answered the question. Maybe a little verbose, but.
No, that was great. That really helps clarify as much as can be possible at this stage of the game. So I really appreciate that. So,
yeah, my pleasure.
If you're done, I have a question on the spend. So I don't know, years ago we came up with that spending cap. So we have more money in the to spend than what we should be spending. Now, how do they deal with that?
So
they're not sure.
Well, I think depending on if you're the governor or the legislature, I think they have different ideas about how they want to handle that. If the governor decided that he wanted to figure out a way to, if everybody agreed that they wanted to blow through the spending cap, they could do it. They could find ways to right. do it. There could be a declaration of an emergency declared by the governor, and then they pass it by a 60% majority, and then they can blow through it to a certain degree.
Right.
In the absence of that, they would have to find the votes to send a bill to the governor's desk that, you know, and either dared him to veto it or had the votes that had a veto-proof majority that did what I said earlier in circumventing some of that. So the spending cap deals with what's in our appropriated funds and then what goes out the door. But if they were to figure out a way to intercept a revenue stream, most likely the sales tax, before it actually hits the state accounts and earmark that, kind of just end round that around the budget to a particular purpose, then that doesn't actually hit the spending cap formula, and whatever they can divert out of that would effectively be a deduction off of that spending cap, for lack of a better term.
Or they could save it until, you know, put it into the general fund and save it for next year. I don't know if they want to, but.
I suppose that could be possible, but the spending cap is based on the expended. I think the reason why they wouldn't do that is because, number one, they want to get some of those dollars out now. I think they have some folks have political pressure to get it done, including, you know, folks like us who are hoping that you know, they do help out the municipalities a bit more. And if they do that, it might not actually be enough to circumvent the cap to the degree that folks would need or want.
Okay. Okay. Right.
So, no, thank you, Judy and Chris. And just in the interest of time, I wanted to jump in here. Any other quick questions for Chris?
At John Coleman, I had one. Just what was the status of the solid waste legislation?
The solid waste legislation is, and if you were to pop quiz me on the nuance, I probably would fail that pop quiz, but that legislation is, give me one moment, I had that. It came out of the Finance Committee, and it's House Bill 6664, an act concerning managing waste and creating a waste authority. That's the one you're referring to, John?
Yes.
Yep, that's on the House of Representatives calendar awaiting action. And it looks like it came out of finance and it came out of, I think, environment.
And the controversial fees, at least controversial with municipalities, have been stripped from the bill. So I think it's more palatable to us now.
Thank you.
All right, that's a good segue to the item I wanted to touch on. Thank you very much, Chris. I wanted to talk about the EPR, Extended Producer Responsibility for Tires Bill, which is House Bill 6486. Many of you attended yesterday's CCM Legislative Committee meeting. We did touch on that bill. It looks like there's very good bipartisan support for the bill. CCM has endorsed it. COST has endorsed it as well. For those of you who are not familiar with it, it would require the industry to create a stewardship program for the recycling of tires, which can be an issue for many of our communities, illegal dumping, and then the disposal costs as well. So the bill should result in long-term savings for municipalities on the solid waste disposal side, and then help alleviate some of the blight and public health conditions that are caused by the illegal dumping of tires. I would very much like to lend CROG support to the bill. I am planning to do that. I think it's consistent with the legislative agenda that the board adopted in January, but I wanted to see if anybody had any concerns regarding that. Again, what I would like to do is lend CROG support to the bill, as CCM, COST, and others have done. Anyone have any concerns with that?
No, do you need a motion to make that official?
No, I don't think so, John. But if you're so inclined, that's fine.
I would defer to the chair if she wishes one.
If you want to, Matt?
I don't think we need it, Lori. I just wanted to see if anybody had any concerns. Again, I think it's consistent with our program.
Sounds like a good idea.
Perfect.
Thanks, Judy. All right. I'm seeing some heads nodding. So I will plan to do that. Thank you very much for your support there.
Hey, Matt, this is Chris Smith. I just want to make sure that I have that tagged as a priority in our tracking. What was that bill number again?
I know 6486.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Lori, I think we're ready to move on. Thank you very much, Chris, for your very informative report and all the good questions there.
Okay, we're going to move on to number six, business items, action, with Cheryl.
Okay, well, I guess we'll take this one first and then the budget. Cheryl.
Okay, thank you. This is a resolution to authorize Matt to enter into an agreement with Yale New Haven. It's actually our fourth grant recently for our Capital Region Medical Reserve Corps. This is the last of the funding Yale has. It's a little over $8,000. And we will be purchasing a couple of AEDs for our Medical Reserve Corps with the funding, along with some training efforts as well.
John Coleman, move approval.
Okay, is there a second?
I second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Thank you.
Motion has it. Thank you. Moving on to B, action, review, and approval for 2023-2024 budget. Matt?
Thank you very much, Lori. And I'll start off and Pauline will add to my comments. So our annual budget, under our process, we present it to the executive committee first in May. And then, you know, once we have your endorsement of the proposed budget, and you certainly have the ability to make any changes you deem appropriate, once we have your endorsement of the proposed budget, we then bring it to the full policy board for review and approval. So if you are comfortable with what we have proposed today, you know, we can certainly bring it to the full board later this month. A couple of initial comments I would make before we get started. And those of you who have served with CROG for some time or on the CROG board are well aware of this. Our budget is somewhat different from your municipal budgets. Number one, it's much smaller. But number two, you can see some significant variance on a percentage basis from year to year, because our budget is different from your general fund budget. You probably have a general fund budget, a capital improvement program or a capital fund, as well as a capital non-recurring fund budget. You probably also have some number of enterprise funds and special revenue funds. Here at CROG, we've got a primary operating budget and then a couple of dedicated funds that Pauline will touch on. But you can view our operating budget almost like a combination of your general fund and your capital fund. So depending on what we have for projects in a given year, the funding for those projects flows through our operating budget. So that operating budget can vary significantly on a percentage basis from year to year. And I know that's different from what you see in your world. So I wanted to flag that in advance. Secondly, I would like to thank our staff team that assembled and put the budget together. All of our department heads, we've got Rob and Cheryl here with us today. And our finance team, Pauline Yoder does a fabulous job every year, Tracy Malafant and others. So let's move forward, Laura. Next slide. So some highlights, you know, like you would see for your municipal budget, our budget is balanced. It is designed to maintain current services and programs, but also add some resources to implement new initiatives that are important to the board and to our executive team. For example, we have included funding here that's coming primarily from the federal government to retain an additional planner and a new project engineer. The budget does maintain our current due structure. So we're not recommending any changes in our due structure. And recall, that's a $3,000 base for each of the 38 towns, and then a per capita of assessment of 68.69 cents. Next slide, please. Other considerations. So one of the major state grant we receive is called the Regional Services Grant. It's administered by OPM. There is a potential that grant could be increased this session. So we have included a contingency table that would talk about how we would recommend we handle a potential increase in that grant. And Pauline will comment on that on a later slide. I would also note that our budget for next year, and this gets at the comments I made at the beginning, you're going to see an increase from past years, and that's due to an increase in revenue. This is a good thing. You know, our federal grants and some state grants we've incorporated into the budget here. For example, the $1 million we received under the Safe Streets for All program, and the grants we're receiving from the state under the Regional Performance Incentive Program. And I'll comment on those in a little bit more detail as we move forward here. Next slide, please. So first, I want to touch on where we are in the current year. Where are we in FY23? So our adjusted budget is somewhat less than our adopted budget. And that is because primarily due to the fact that we had some key staff vacancies and we've been able to complete somewhat fewer projects than we had contemplated because of that. But our estimated budget, where we think we're going to end this fiscal year, on the revenue side, we're at approximately $7.6 million, and on the expenditure side, at approximately $7.4 million. And as you will see on the revenue side, and this holds true each and every year, the majority of our funding is coming from the federal government. PL funds, which stands for Metropolitan Planning Funds from the Federal Highway Trust Fund. That's our primary revenue source. And then you see how the expenditures break down. And I'll comment on that in more detail for the upcoming year. Next slide, please. So looking at next year's proposed budget, what our executive team is recommending to all of you. We are recommending a budget of approximately $9.3 million for next fiscal year. On the revenue side, you see revenues coming in slightly higher than expenditures. On the revenue side, again, most of the funding is coming from the federal government and then the state government. Local dues make up only 8% of our operating budget. And then this other category, which Pauline will elaborate on in her section. On the expenditure side, most of the funding would go towards contractual services. These are the consultants that we retain to work on our projects, like our corridor studies, like the East Coast Greenway, et cetera. The funding we need for staff at CROG is probably 50 to 60% of the overall budget. You see most of the expenditures, again, going towards contractual services for next year. Salaries accounting at approximately $2.1 million, and our fringe in management support, roughly the same amount. Next slide, please. So let's break this down in a little bit more detail, looking at both revenues and expenditures. So revenues by source, as I've commented on a couple of times already, the vast majority of our funding is coming from the federal government. You know, those federal highway funds, as well as the Safe Streets for All program. And that would constitute 60%, almost $5.6 million, 60% of the proposed budget for next year. The next highest category is funding coming from the state. This would be the RPIP grants. This would be the regional services grant at approximately $2.5 million or 27% of proposed revenues. Again, local dues at $783,000 approximately would constitute only 8% of proposed revenues. And then we have the 5% under the other category that Pauline will comment on later. On the expenditure side, again, the majority of the funding going for contractual support and then salaries and fringe to support our staff. Next slide, please. So here's a snapshot looking at revenues over expenditures, breaking it out between the six main areas of the budget. We've got our administrative section. We've got our regional services grant, the regional program, transportation, the Department of Transportation Planning, the Department of Regional Planning and Development, our Department of Municipal Services, and our Department of Public Safety and Homeland Security. And you can see how this breaks down with respect to dedicated revenues for those areas, as well as proposed expenditures for those areas. Next slide, please. So adding a little bit more detail to those main sections. First, looking at regional services and council administration, this would be a proposed budget of approximately $1 million to $1.1 million. And this section of the budget does support staff and consultants in all departments, looking at areas of shared services, public safety, and related activities. Next slide, please. The next department is regional planning and development. And recall, we carved this out of the larger Department of Planning when we reorganized this year. We now have two planning departments. our Department of Regional Planning and Development, and our Department of Transportation Planning. And for this department, we've got a proposed budget of approximately $1.1 million. And you see that on the expenditure side, the bulk of the funding would be dedicated towards our brownfields remediation program, our natural hazard mitigation plan update for next year, and then this NPAO slash SPA, that is a grant we receive from the CDC, federal monies administered by the state through DPH for transportation related, active transportation activities. Next slide, please. Transportation planning. This is our largest single department from a staff perspective, from a revenue perspective, and from an expenditure perspective. So you'll see here a proposed budget of approximately $4.5 million. And the bulk of the funding, as you can see, is dedicated towards planning, transportation planning activities at 62% of the budget. LOTSIP administration constitutes 13% of the proposed budget. That's one of the most important programs, in my view, that we provide here at CROG. And late in a couple of weeks, you're gonna see another round of LOTSIP funding recommendations for your approval. And we're looking to award approximately $33 million in LOTSIP projects in this upcoming round, which is great. And I think the highest amount ever. And then at 19% of expenditures for related studies. Next is our department, our small but mighty, correct, Cheryl? Department of Public Safety and Homeland Security, with a proposed budget of approximately $1.4 million. And you see most of the funding is coming from DPH and to support our public health agencies, as well as our emergency management activities and various homeland security projects. Next slide, please. Municipal services, a proposed budget next year of approximately $1.1 million. And this department supports a variety of activities. Our very popular purchasing council, and this includes members beyond CROG. I think we have approximately 100 members in the purchasing council. It also supports the Crumbling Foundation's testing program, our GIS and IT program, the RPIP grants. You know, we're overseeing those here. So a lot of good work happening in municipal services as well. Next slide, please. So I'm now going to turn things over to Pauline. She's going to touch on the next couple of slides. And when she completes her comments, I do want to talk about the special projects and regional fund, because we have a substantial balance here of approximately $1.9 million. I want to talk about how we begin to utilize that funding. We also want to talk about our general fund balance, which is approaching $2.4 million. And Pauline and I think, you know, that's obviously very healthy and probably a little bit more than we need in that category. So we have some thoughts for the committee and the board to consider for the future. Pauline?
So I blame the ugliness of this slide on the auditors. This is the way our fund balances are distributed by the auditors. So that's how we've kept it here. And very straightforward, our general fund, you have the projection at the top. And that other category that Matt said I would address is that primarily through municipal services, we have fees that we collect either membership fees from those outside the CROG region, and also vendor fees from administrative fees. And that's where that generates from. If you've ever used some of our programs, you will see that line item in your invoices, depending on the program. And then also that category also includes any match that is not from our local dues. You'll notice that in this regional fund that Matt referenced that it's a negative revenue, and that is because we regularly put $100,000 into it, but we're also using that fund as a match fund for a couple of different grants, for RPIP grants and for the natural hazard mitigation grant. And so for next year, it's a negative revenue. I also blame the auditors for that line item. And so you can go to the next slide, Laura. So that's our fund balance. And then the next thing is our sort of long-term projections. We do this every year, trying to predict the future. And I will note that whenever you see like sort of that high balance on the likely or best case, that is likely to actually be less than that, because what we will do is we would hire contractors or consultants to fulfill whatever that those grants would end up being. However, I feel very comfortable with these projections. It's the further out we are, the harder it is to predict, but we have lots of opportunities to mitigate against worst case scenarios. And I don't anticipate that in the future. That is definitely the worst case. So the next thing is the contingency. Matt referenced that there is a potential increase for the regional services grant. And so as part of the budget, I don't know if those of you who are longer standing, you might remember that when we had an increase in RSG, we would do a budget amendment mid-year. That is a little bit nightmarish for the finance group. So we put in a contingency in the budget to, in case at, by the end of session, we will know by the end of June, by the middle of June, whether this passes or not. Of what the potential increase would be. With that increase, if there is such an increase, instead of using the regional fund for the matches, we would use the regional services grant for the match, for those match expenses. And then we would also potentially hire two new employees. Hopefully for when we move into our new space, because I don't know where we would put them right now. There's also a potential for the regional election advisor being funded once again after a 5 or 6 year hiatus. And we have a staff person on hand. It's not significant funding. Laura, if you could go back to the fund table so that Matt can address the sort of thoughts that we had. One more back. Perfect.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pauline. So as we noted earlier, you know, our special projects and regional fund, which you all have been dutifully funding for several years now, we've got a balance of approximately 1.9 million. So what we would suggest, there are probably going to be some good ideas coming out of our strategic visioning process. And we could look at this funding source to use for that purpose. For example, you know, do we want to consider a regional stormwater management or mitigation initiative like we've talked about in municipal services? We're waiting on a state grant. You know, we don't know to when or whether we're going to receive that. You know, that's one potential project. We could also look at creating almost our own RPIP program at the COG level, you know, where we fund sub-regional projects. Maybe that's 2, 3, 4 towns working together on shared services. Now we could look at this as a potential funding source. And then looking at the fund balance of almost 2.4 million, Pauline, I think would feel much more comfortable with, or would feel comfortable with fund balance at closer to 2 million. You know, we would recommend that we transfer some of this fund balance to the special projects and regional fund that we can use for the purposes I just described. So again, you know, we're going to be conducting this strategic visioning project in the near future that hopefully all of you will participate in. And that process should generate some good ideas around the use of some of these funds here. So Lori, we can now take questions. I know that was a lot. I appreciate everybody's time and attention. Happy to take any questions or comments that the members have.
Anybody have any questions?
I see Peter.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Matt. Question, in the budget book, Matt, it looked like there's potential increase of 3.5 full-time equivalents between over to 23 amount, budgeted amount. Am I reading that correctly?
Actually, it's partially because we had Tim Malone's position open for quite some time. So the projected staff, so it would actually be in a 2 to 2.5% increase. It's because we had openings that weren't filled for some periods of time this fiscal year that the full-time equivalents don't quite line up with what we're actually doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't know if those FY23 was budgeted or projected actual.
It's projected actual.
Okay, thank you. Overall, in terms of the use of special projects in regional fund, I think it is appropriate based upon what comes out of the strategic planning effort in the next few months to look at that fund. In terms of the general fund reserve, I'm looking out at one of the charts in the budget book that talks about potential revenue shortfalls, and I believe it's fiscal year 27-28, and there's look that they're related to potential loss of transportation funding. So I guess I would look to perhaps be a little bit cognizant of what happens in the next 2 to 3 years in terms of committing use of general fund if it looks like we're going to be potentially losing transportation funding. But those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Anybody else? If not, anything for other business?
Oh, I'm sorry, Lori. I'd like to ask the committee, are you comfortable with the proposed budget, now that we've walked through it? If so, we would look for a motion to approve and submit to the policy board later this month. And I do want to thank Peter for his good comments.
Would somebody like to make that motion?
I would make that motion, John Coleman.
Okay, is there a second?
Second, Steve Jones.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Great. Motion passes, thank you. Matt, do you want to say anything about the meeting tomorrow?
The one for Easy IQC, Lori?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, thank you. So yes, tomorrow we're going to be hosting the annual meeting of our Easy IQC user group. Really want to thank Kim Bona on our staff for her excellent work supporting the program all year round and for helping to put this meeting together. We are going to be in Mark Shota's Fairtown. We're going to be meeting at the Southington Pavilion. And we're going to highlight some of the key successes of the program for the past year, and we're going to make some awards as well. So looking forward to a good event tomorrow. Thank you for highlighting that, Lori.
Great. Does anybody else have anything? If not, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, is there a second?
Second, John Coleman.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion has it. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks for all your hard work.
Have a good day.
Thank you.